go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, a new week begins at the horn. And where in the world did November go? It's the 21st day of November, 2016. 2016 tottering toward its miserable end. Hey, I'm Bob Kincaid, little ray of sunshine. Yeah, no. It is. It's November 21st. This is Moran Monday on the horn. Of course, I'm just about to the point where it feels like every day for the next 4 years is going to be Moran Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, because, well, frankly, we have been attacked and beaten by the Morans, or at least dramatically set back for the time being. It's Thanksgiving week here in the United States. That's a time when white people celebrate a holiday invented by white people, designed to suggest that no, we really didn't steal everything here. No, we did. We just found it. This guy handed us the continent in an alley one night. Yeah, that's right. I don't know. Maybe some of my native friends, my indigenous friends, celebrate it as Feed an Illegal Immigrant Day. Because that's what Thanksgiving's all about. The white people were so goddamn clueless they couldn't feed themselves. And in an act of charitable decency, the native populations of the Northeast, in the Massachusetts area, put on a dinner for them. So, anyway, it is. It's Thanksgiving week here. And just a program note, for me, for Agnes, for Margie, it's just another work week because Margie has to work at Hellmart on Thanksgiving and Black Friday. So we're going to go over and do our Thanksgiving on Saturday with the grandbabies and kind of put all the Sturm und Drang and Angst. Why are all our words for really, stressful situations German? I don't know. Lackadaisical, lifeless boredom. Ah, for that we go to French, ennui, right? But, angst, yeah. thank you, Luda. Exactly. Luda says, in my community, we call it Kick a Pilgrim Day. And let's remember, as we go through this Thanksgiving week, that the Puritans were nothing to write home about. The reason they weren't in England is because they were so odious that they had been run over to Holland. And then the Dutch looked at them and said, really? No, there's a whole new world over there. You need to go. And so they did. And proceeded to make lots of people miserable. I tell you, I'm really, really working on this little ray of sunshine thing here. But there will be family gatherings, and I don't envy anybody who has to share a table with a trumpansie, and a lot of you will. And so, toward that end, there will be a live broadcast on Thursday evening. When you've had all you can stand of crazy old Uncle Trumpansie, you can come here. We'll have a live broadcast just like any other Thursday. It'll be a thorn in the side Thursday. And it'll be lots and lots and lots of thorns. because many of us will have to have. I won't. And there won't be any of that on Saturday. I'm blissfully free of that stuff. So many other people will, though. And I did the Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid part. Oh, listen, yeah. So there will be a broadcast. And this is a listener-supported program. We try to raise $200 every evening, whether we need it or not, and we always need it. And that can be one at 200, two at 100, four at 50, eight at 25, 16 at 12, 50, 32 at 6 1/4, or 64 at $3.13. 10 at 20, 20 at 10. Doesn't matter. We try to raise. And please remember, that's the minimum. I mean, Lord God, it would be nice if we could do $500 a night, but I doubt that's going to happen. But we do. We try to raise $200 an evening, and there are tons of bills waiting to be paid. Now that we're running heaters, the power bill will get brutaler. That's a word. I mean, Jesus, if I have to live in a country where bigly is a word, then I can say brutaler. But, yeah, that we try to raise $200. If you prefer the U.S. Postal Service, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801 for checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, not Bob Kincaid. Because Boss Man Wayne picks him up and then he sends him on down to the credit union. Okay? And he keeps a weather eye out for the occasional Klansman. Because remember, UPS likes to do business with the Klan. So, that takes care of, got that. And that leaves us to deal with Moran Monday. But before we get to Moran Monday, I want to share a note that came in from Matt in the Bay Area over the weekend. I think Matt captured a real sense of a real sense of the moment. I did neglect to mention. Yeah, we are searching for subscribers. That first page at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. When you click on that, there's a little box that says Make this a recurring monthly donation. If you click that, it's a kind of a set it and forget it thing. Every now and then. They fail, whatever, but it, yeah. But we are looking for lots and lots of subscribers. Anyway, I got this note, and I didn't respond over the weekend because I wanted y'all to hear this. Because I think it really does. It captures the spirit of a lot of us. Gay, straight, black, white, male, female. You know, those of us who don't like seeing our country slide into fascism and who have declared themselves to be part of the resistance. Well, true enough, Asa. Brother Deacon Asa points out, yes, you're living in a country where brutaler is a word and bigly smalls is the president-elect. Don't remind me. Now, I'm getting to the point where I'm overwhelmed. And if I am, you've got to be. Or I don't know, maybe it doesn't necessarily want it, but I'm immersed in stuff pretty much 24/7. And I've had about all the talk I can stand about the speculation of what the Trump administration will be. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. It's like I said Friday night. None of us have ever lived in American-style fascism before. There have been fascistic overtones, fascistic tendencies, but no, we've never, I think we're about to find out, but nobody knows. And I'm plumb worn out. At this point in time, the only thing that's saving my sanity are cat pictures and the Obama-Biden pictures. The one where, and they're fun because they're getting more cryptic. Like the one where Biden tells President Obama that he has left a deck of Uno cards for Benito Cheeto. And all you, huh? Yeah, I took out all the red ones and the blue ones and the yellow ones. Huh? Yeah, there's nothing left but green cards. Ah! Like I said, cat pictures and it's a tenuous thread upon which to hang one's sanity, but it's the thread that's hanging down before me, and I clutch at it. But anyway, in the wee small hours of the morning, a note came in from Matt in San Francisco, in the Bay Area. As I listened, Matt writes, to the various podcasts from last week, I have come away with a few thoughts about understanding the Trump voter and listening to the economically anxious. Fuck them. I was a young man, Matt writes, during the Reagan years. I watched so many of my friends die in part because of the government's delay of even acknowledging that HIV/AIDS even existed. It was years before Reagan even uttered the word. No one was seeking to understand our reality. No one sought to understand what it was like to be 24 years old and going to a funeral every couple of weeks as you watched your contemporaries die. So excuse me if I don't give a shit about understanding the economically anxious Trump voters. I don't see those voters seeking to understand what it is like for minorities in our country, how they must battle daily against an entire system of oppression, how they experience microaggression daily, how gay people, people of color, and women have to be twice as competent, work twice as hard to get that promotion and be paid less for that achievement than their straight white male counterparts. I've experienced this current hate in different forms my entire life. I've had bottles thrown at me as the car passes with its occupants screaming out, "Faggots!" I know what it's like to be in a company meeting, speaking up and making salient points, only to be ignored because my opinions were not as worthy as the straight guy. I don't need to seek to understand these people. I already know them. I don't buy the notion that if we just listened more closely to their anxiety, we can come together and find common ground. The vice president-elect has said gay couples signaled societal collapse and that keeping us from marrying was not discrimination, but an enforcement of God's law. He thinks I would benefit from conversion therapy. All that, and I should hear out the crowd that put this man one heartbeat away from the presidency? Again, fuck them. Seeking common ground and understanding others is the problem with us liberals. The other side doesn't give a shit about what we think. The only thing they care about is winning, that their ideology win, and that the rest of us fall in line and get with their program. If we don't, well, we can just die, because in their minds we weren't good for much anyway. I mean, after all, it says so in that book by Mr. Gideon. I will not engage in any exercise about determining the percent of Trump voters that are economically anxious. It was never about economics. If it was, they would have voted for Bernie. For them, it has always been about hate. So spare me the hand-wringing and sincere attempts to understand. It is not that complicated. It's about hate. This presidential term is going to be like no other I've ever lived through during my 52 years in this country. I won't be surprised when the shit hits the fan, and with the Republicans in charge of everything, the shit will surely hit the fan. They can't help themselves. It's what they do. When it does, do you think the Republicans will be looking back and trying to understand what all the cries from the left were about after this shit show of an election? The short answer is fuck no. Which is why I say, fuck them, act up, fight back. Signed, Matt, in San Francisco. And I thank you for that, Matt, because it kind of goes hand in hand with a piece that Faith, who has long been a supporter of this program, don't get emails or calls or anything. Hi, Faith. But she has long supported the program. And Faith pointed out an article to me over on my page earlier today. The problem is that the problem isn't that we don't understand Trump voters. The problem is they don't want to understand themselves and why they continually seek to vote for the very politicians that create misery. Now, if you want to read this particular piece, it's on a site called Forseti's Justice, Forseti, Forsetti.tumblr.com. And it goes back to the 14th of November. The title of the piece is On Rural America, Understanding Isn't the Problem. And it's a lengthy piece, and I took the time to read the whole darn thing. Because, you know, us practitioners of the art of word knowing have to do that kind of thing. The author establishes his bona fides by saying, I grew up in rural Christian white America. You'd be hard-pressed to find an area in the country that has a higher percentage of Christians or whites. I spent most of the first 24 years of my life deeply embedded in this culture. I religiously, pun intended, attended their Christian services. I worked off and on their rural farms. I dated their calico-skirted daughters. I camped, hunted, and fished with their sons. I listened to their political rants at the local diner and truck stop. I winced at their racist, bigoted jokes and epithets that were said more out of ignorance than animosity. I've also watched the town I grew up in go from a robust economy with well-kept homes and infrastructure and turn into a struggling economy with shuttered businesses, dilapidated homes, and a broken-down infrastructure over the past 30 years. The problem isn't that I don't understand these people. The problem is that they don't understand themselves and the reasons for their anger, frustrations, and don't seem to care to know why. And then it's off to the races. He says, another problem with rural Christian white Americans is they are racists. See, off to the racists, get it? I don't just do things. I'm not talking about white hood-wearing, cross-burning, lynching racists, though some are. I'm talking about people who deep down in their heart of hearts truly believe they are superior because they're white. Their white God made them in his white image, and everyone else is a less-than-perfect version, flawed, cursed. The religion in which I was raised taught this. And he's not making that up, okay? The religion I was raised in taught this. And they go back to Genesis and the story of one of Noah's son, Ham or Bacon or Pastrami, whoever the guy was. And God turned him into a black dude because God was mad at him. And that echoes down thousands of years to the point that in the mid-19th century, there were preachers talking about how slavery existed because God had ordained it by putting the stain on the sons of Ham. He ain't kidding. They carry a Bible and tell you everyone's a child of God, but forget to mention that some of God's children are more favored than others, and skin tone is the criterion by which we know who is and who isn't at the top of God's list of most favored children. For us coastal elites who understand evolution, genetics, science, nothing we say to those in flyover country is going to be listened to, because not only are we fighting against an anti-education belief system, we are arguing against God. Let that one go all the way to the ground, please, all the way into the bone, and, you know, let it make your toenails itch, okay? If you're talking to someone whose mind is poisoned by religion, if they declare that if some gospel sharp has told them that their God opposes it, it don't matter. But thanks to things like cognitive dissonance, they will show up for their flu shots, which, you know, their God says can't possibly exist because evolution is, a Chinese fraud that meant to destroy American manufacturing. It all gets jumbled after a while. Yeah. You aren't winning a battle of beliefs with these people if you're on one side of the argument and God is on the other. No degree of understanding this is going to suddenly make them less racist, more open to reason and facts. Telling urban elites they need to understand rural Americans isn't going to lead to a damn thing because it misses the causes of the problem. And it, you know, even some of the problem arises from this demarcation between rural and urban. Now, for a long time, we've known that the word urban, you know, for instance, as in urban music, that's just a placeholder for black. But in this case, I don't think urban is necessarily a dog whistle. There are people who live in cities, and there are people who live in the country. I live in the country. But there are also, there are also overtones that go with the word rural that don't necessarily make any sense. I mean, we say rural as if somehow America isn't out here. Not America. No, this is the real America, damn it. As if civilization isn't out here. And, you know, I joke about that from time to time, talking about, you know, I enjoy it when I get a chance to go to civilization. I mean, we got pizza joints out here. I mean, even in Talibandiana, they've got good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical pizza joints that won't cater gay weddings. And don't have to. We have grocery stores. And you know, even my, both Hellmart and Kroger have sections that are devoted to free-range, cruelty-free, gluten-free, happy, no hormone, no antibiotic, non-GMO marshmallows. We got that. Rural, I think, is a shorthand for what this guy is going after. Fundamentalist. Now, I don't know how it is in the rest of the world. I'm a white guy with a very limited range of experience, I admit. I love it when that experience gets expanded. But I am what I am, who and what I am. When fundamentalist uprisings happen in other countries, say Iran or Saudi Arabia, where different versions of fundamentalism hold sway, did that come out of the cities or did that come out of the countryside? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter. Anyway, this particular author says, because rural Christian white Americans will not listen to educated arguments supported by facts that go against their fundamentalist belief systems from outsiders, any change must come from within. Internal change in these systems does happen, but it happens infrequently, and it always lags far behind reality. That's why they fear change so much. They aren't used to it. And, of course, it really doesn't matter whether they like it or not. Like the evolution and climate change, even though they don't believe it, it's going to happen whether they believe in it or not, because science doesn't give a damn what you believe. I added that last part. Some happy news coming in from Ron in back here in Trump America. 5x5 in snowy Vermont. The fireplace works well, and the company is great. Yeah, I'd say you're in good company, Ron. So rural becomes a stand-in for ignorant. And I think there's some truth in it. But the problem is that the ignorance is, to one extent, self-inflicted, but to another extent, inflicted upon. You're going to probably have a better school. Your kids are going to go to better schools, depending on where they are in a particular urban environment. Here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan. It's nothing to see counties with school grades D, C, F. And that's for entire school systems. This piece is worth reading. A closed-off belief system is like your spinal fluid. It's great as long as nothing infectious gets into it. If bacteria gets into your spinal fluid, it causes unbelievable damage because there are no white blood cells in it whose job is to fend off invaders and protect the system. What has happened to too many fundamentalist belief systems is damaging information has been allowed in from people who have been granted expert status. Televangelists and the like. If someone is allowed into a closed-off system and their information is deemed acceptable, anything they say will be readily accepted and become gospel. Rural Christian white Americans have let in an anti-intellectual, anti-science, bigoted racists into their system as experts like Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly, and any of the blonde Stepford wives on Fox. Every evangelical preacher on television, because they tell them what they want to hear and because they sell themselves as being one of them. The truth is, none of these people give a rat's ass about rural Christian white Americans, except how they can exploit them for attention and money. It goes on for quite some time. How do you make climate change personal to someone who believes only God can alter the weather? How do you make racial equality personal to someone who believes whites are naturally superior to non-whites? How do you make gender equality personal to someone who believes women are supposed to be subservient to men by God's command? How do you get someone to view minorities as not threatening personal to people who don't live around and never interact with them? Questions, questions, questions. Meanwhile, he has a list of things that rural Christian white Americans believe but aren't true. Their economic situation is largely the result of voting for supply-side economic policies that have been the largest redistribution of wealth from the bottom middle to the top in U.S. history. And Ronald Reagan got them to do that by telling them it was morning in America. Maybe that's another one of those things. They vote for slogans. Make America great again. No one is coming for their guns. All that's been proposed during the entire Obama administration is having better background checks. Don't forget letting people carry guns in national parks. Gay people getting married is not a threat to their freedom to believe whatever God you want to. No one's going to make their church marry gays, make gays your pastor, or accept gays for membership. Women having access to birth control doesn't affect their life either, especially women who they complain about being teenage single mothers. They get the largest share of food stamps, Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. They use illicit drugs as much as any other group. But when another group does it, it's a moral failing, and they should be punished severely and legally. On the other hand, when the problem happens to a white rural community, it's a health crisis and needs sympathy and attention. Nah, boy, wow, a lot of truth there. They complain about the little man being run out of business and turn around and shop at big box stores. The problem, the writer concludes, is I understand they are the problem with progress and will always be because their belief systems are constructed against it. The problem isn't a lack of understanding by coastal elites of rural Christian white America. The problem is a lack of understanding why rural Christian white America believes, votes, and behaves the way it does by rural Christian white America. Yeah, that's on a caliber with Martin Luther's theses nailed to the door. And, you know, just in the name of context, it's a process of history. As I've noted before, the founders and framers knew the revolution was finished, done, dead. Their dreams, their hopes, their ambitions, gone. By the time they were checking out, Adams and Jefferson died on the same day, July the 4th, 1826, and they knew it was over. They knew it damned well. And then along came the First Great Awakening, which is a misnomer in its own right because the First Great Awakening wasn't an awakening at all. It was merely a weaponizing of religious bigotry. And the Great Awakening took root in what was then the frontier, Mississippi, Tennessee, Alabama, Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, and from that point forward, we were, as a nation, screwed. I just wanted to share those things because that essay it intersected so nicely with what Matt wrote from San Francisco. And that's true. Ron in Vermont says, and the jobs won't be coming back for the coal miners, at least not mining coal. And there's really no getting around that. But it really doesn't matter if you consider this in the light that author at Forseti's Justice was describing. It's okay, and there are already polls and interviews and color glossy 8x10 photos with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one that show that the Trumpanzees don't really care if he doesn't build the wall. I've said that there would be a political price to pay. There may not be. They don't really care if he doesn't actually round up 11 million people and stick them in concentration camps and then go to work on a final solution. They don't care. And they don't care if their jobs don't come back. And they don't care if he doesn't create a Muslim ban coming into the United States. And they don't care if he grabs every woman's vagina between New York and San Diego. Because this wasn't about any particular policy issue. They don't care if he does or doesn't hold Klan rallies with burning fucking crosses on the White House lawn. They don't care. This was a case of what Walt Whitman referred to as a barbaric yawp. Y-A-W-P. It's a yawp. Walt Whitman was a longtime practitioner of the art of word knowing, and he needed a word, and he invented one, and he invented yawp. Yawp! 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 That's what the vote was. It was a yawp. A great big collective, 60 million voice strong yawp. Of anger and aggrievement and fury and frustration and I mean, it's the caveman looking at a wheel and not having a light go on and getting mad at the wheel for not, you know, because it rolls away and then just beating it into a million pieces. It was the yawp of a big old mastodon. Stuck in the goo. You know, more mastodons were not going to get them out. You know, they were mastodons. They didn't have thumbs. But they could scream, and they screamed loudly until and floop suggested the tar pit. But no, they're not getting any jobs here in West Virginia. There aren't any. There might be something nominal. But here's the thing. There was no way for the coal industry to come back in the first place. Because the coal industry they wanted to come back is the coal industry that needed so much labor that it created an entire shanty towns that are ghost towns here in West Virginia now. That had to have massive amounts of labor. Well, the coal industry doesn't need that anymore. I ran into a fellow over the weekend. Went over to the grocery store, not Hellmart. And he was a jovial, likable sort of fella, and he was still wearing his work clothes. Go figure. Neither my father or my grandfather would have ever walked away from the mines still covered in coal mine filth, but, you know, whatever. And we just talked a little bit about his work. He said, you know, one of the ventilator fans went down, so they sent me home. Don't got to work today. He was happy to have a Saturday off. He said they're moving as much coal as they can get dug out. I asked him, I said, how many on your crew? He said, my shift, 15 people. Those 15 people can dig more coal in one shift than a 75-man crew could with shovels 100 years ago. And that 100-year-ago coal mining is not coming back. And he mines metallurgical coal, the fella does. He said, stuff's going for $300 a ton. We can't keep up with demand. But metallurgical coal is kind of a rare bird. It's also kind of a dodge, too, when you get right down to it. But there's business for that. There's not a hell of a lot left in southern West Virginia. Some of it's in, you know, foot and a half, 2 foot seams that they blow 800 feet of mountain off to get at. And that doesn't take very many people either. But there's, it's impossible. But don't take my word for it. Ken Ward over at his Coal Tattoo blog cites a New York Times story quoting Ted O'Brien, a coal analyst at Doyle Trading Consultants, a leading energy industry research firm. I don't think the Trump presidency will have a material impact on bringing coal miners back to work. He may eliminate the regulatory overhang, but I have a hard time seeing a surge in coal demand. There's not going to be a surge in coal demand against, you know, for electricity generation as compared to the far more cheap to produce and much more plentiful frack gas, which is poisoning people in an entirely different way and is not really a separate conversation. But the election wasn't run on a promise to put our those hard-working gas patch workers back to, because, you know, they're working, and it doesn't take many people. Here's the funny part, though. Even if, in the broadest sense, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini could fulfill his promise to put all those coal miners back to work, I don't think we've got them. I don't. That would mean workers would have to come here and become coal miners from somewhere else. Now, who wants to do that? Really, who wants to go be a coal miner? I mean, it's all well and good to listen to the old songs about it and everything, but nobody wants to be one, unless, you know, maybe Pappy and Grandpappy and Great Grandpappy and Great Great Grandpappy were all coal miners, and you're so short sighted that you can't imagine doing anything that your Great Great Grandpappy didn't do. You see? And this whole line of thinking came about because, lo and behold, Jim Kunta Kinte Justice his people, his campaign, put out a press release. Today, President-elect Donald J. Trump called Governor-elect Jim Justice to congratulate him on his victory and to discuss how to revive West Virginia's coal industry. The 15-minute phone conversation focused primarily on how the two could work together to put coal miners back to work. The Governor-elect took the call during his Greenbrier East basketball practice. He's the volunteer head coach for the Greenbrier East High School girls basketball team, or maybe middle school. I'm not sure. During the conversation, Justice also discussed West Virginia's tourism and other job possibilities with the president-elect. It is an exciting day for West Virginia because we now have a pathway to the White House and a president-elect who is totally committed to putting our miners back to work. President-elect Trump made it clear that he won't forget about West Virginia when it comes to our nation's energy policies. I'll work closely with President-elect and his administration on clean coal technology, rolling back the job-killing EPA regulations on coal, and growing West Virginia's other job opportunities. President-elect Trump asked Justice to pass along a message to the people of West Virginia. We are going to get those coal miners back to work. Not mining coal, you're not. Ron points out, I suspect many of Trump's votes came from people who didn't really believe anything he said, but they were never going to vote for the establishment. They would have voted for Forrest Gump or Chauncey Gardner, either of which would have been a better choice. I love that other job opportunities part, because they kind of winked at it earlier in the press release. Justice also discussed West Virginia's tourism and other job possibilities with the president-elect. Now, I've mentioned this before. I'll mention it again. I really don't necessarily know that you can call something an industry when it does not provide year-around good-paying jobs. And the tourism industry in West Virginia does not do that. All kinds of people out of work right now here in the heart of West Virginia's tourism industry, because the tourism industry is gone dark and it won't wake up till about late March, early April, and it won't get going real good till about May. And then it'll be hell's a poppin' from May to roughly September, and it'll slack off, and then it'll pick back up for the remainder of golly season, and then third Saturday in October, it's gone again. And the people who work in that tourism industry, you know, maybe it's good for them right now. Young. Don't necessarily need to be tied down to a 40-hour-a-week job, or don't feel like they want to be, have the freedom to, I know and talk to some of these folks, and I love them. And they go off and they go, rock climbing in Thailand, which is really cool. I mean, just the very idea of it. Yeah. But that's not where a future's built. Not on minimum wage and sub-minimum wage jobs that are only there for 8-9 months out of the year and then catch as catch can and then hope you get hired back on. Anything that runs on an economic model like that, you really can't call an industry. And I really don't think that, I don't think there's anything to argue about there. But the fact that they mentioned tourism tells you that they kind of know. Hell, they do know. They're just not going to smarten up a chump. Remember, the W.C. Fields' three commandments. You can't cheat an honest man. That's commandment one, and that's absolutely true. Never give a sucker an even break. That's commandment two. Number three, don't smarten up a chump. So they have to keep talking about others. Well, you know, we're gonna bring the coal industry back. We're gonna put them miners back to work. And 2 years from now, when the miners still aren't back to work, they'll say, well, that Kenyan Muslim usurper Obama was such a wizard that he tied things up in so many knots, it's going to take us a while to get them unknotted. And 2 years later, when Benito Chito is running for re-election, they'll say, well, we're right there on the verge of putting all them coal miners back to work. We just about got them Obama EPA regulations rolled back.
Now, y'all just got to be patient a little bit longer. And I tell you what, prosperity's just around the corner in Appalachia.
And even then, I doubt they'll wake up. Because, you know, here in Appalachia, we've been promised that prosperity's just around the corner for about 150 years. When the only prosperity we ever had was when people actually came here and tried to live out the Jeffersonian dream of being literate yeoman farmers, thinking about high-minded ideals like democracy, while at the same time raising enough food for them to survive on. And, you know, murdering the native population. And hoping typhus or diphtheria didn't break out. Or scarlet fever. Or any of those other things that you can kind of protect against with a vaccine that hadn't yet been invented. Smallpox. Polio. Ron asks, would I be wrong in saying that the government could roll back every single EPA regulation regarding burning coal in power plants and it wouldn't make a whit of difference to the Appalachian coal mining community? You'd probably not be wrong in saying that because it's not going to make coal cheaper than gas. This is just, that part of it's just economics. And unless it's metallurgical coal, the economics of coal don't make any sense. And then there's the fact that in southern West Virginia, most of it's gone. Anyway. See what happens when you send me long, thinky emails? My poor little mind starts running all over creation. That other job opportunities language, Steve in New York says they're already hedging. They've been hedging, Steve. They've been hedging. Well, there it is. Randy at PA says, yep, my great-grandmother used to preach that Sons of Ham business. So that's just the front end. That's just, you know, just a little early pre-Moran Monday kind of, you know, thoughts and musings and ramblings and rumblings and grumblings. He also shared with me how much he cares about the people of West Virginia. Not a damn bit. I mean, for instance, as Agnes points out to me, you can go back and read the Trump Playboy interview from a long, long time ago. And in it, he speaks his mind about people who, you know, make their lives mining coal. He gave that interview 27 years ago. And in that interview 27 years ago, he said he couldn't imagine being a coal miner because people who mined coal just didn't have any gumption to do anything else. Somehow or another, we couldn't get that message to stick. Charming, huh? But we got lots of morons. Lots and lots of morons. Last I checked, I think the violent acts of economically anxious white people is up around up past 160. Let's see here. I think we got. I think we've got some economic anxiety right here. Yeah. And again, a gentle reminder: this did not happen in, say, Alabama or Tennessee or Arkansas or even Texas. This happened in Queens, you know, New York City. This is an Uber driver, a Muslim man, who was simply, you know, being an Uber driver when some economic anxiety broke out.
I don't care, bro. Video. You're a loser. You don't even from here, you loser. You and your family, you terrorist. Video all you want. You're an Arab. You're a loser. Sad. Exactly. Video. What is that gonna do? What is that gonna do? Trump is president. So you can kiss your visa goodbye, scumbag. They'll deport you soon. Don't worry, terrorist. Oh my God, I'm so scared. Would you steal it? Nah,
well, bam, sis.
Yeah, that was provided. I mean, that was part of a Washington Post story. So necessarily, they beeped out all the words that actually kind of show you what kind of a person the Trumpansy is. Trump is president, asshole. So you can kiss your fucking visa goodbye, scumbag. They'll deport you soon. Don't worry, you fucking terrorist. And you know, I mean, the guy's driving a nice-looking white SUV. Of course it's white. And, I mean, he had economic anxiety, man. It gets around. Mm-hmm. I mean, go figure. The white supremacists had themselves a little clavern meeting in D.C. this weekend. Of course, they've all got terrible economic anxiety. After their clavern meeting, they all went to dinner in D.C. at a place called Maggiano's Little Italy in the Friendship Heights neighborhood. And then the little neo-Nazis began tweeting out photographs, one of which now famously shows a couple of white guys and Tila Tequila giving the stiff-armed Nazi salute with Tila Tequila tweeting out Sieg Heil. Naturally, she misspelled the Sieg part. Right. The National Policy Institute. They're a think tank, and it's all tax-free. They're a Nazi think tank. Yes, 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 America. We have Nazi think tanks in America because freedom. Well, it didn't sit too well in Maggiano's Little Italy. I mean, never mind. That's right. Marty asks, isn't Tila Tequila? Maybe it is tequila. I don't know. Maybe it's the Swiss pronunciation. Not exactly white. She's not exactly white. But that's okay. Because, you know, they'll work with collaborators. And you wonder what no collaboration means. No, she's Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, they'll play. And Maggiano's Little Italy eventually said, okay, we're donating $10,000, the amount of money we made Friday night, to the D.C. office of the Anti-Defamation League. Because people began pointing out to them, guys, do you know that you're hosting a Nazi party? I mean, not the Nazi party, but a party attended by a whole bunch of Nazis. See, we really need them to wear the spiffy black Hugo Boss uniforms so that we'll know they're Nazis, because Americans don't think, I mean, you got to look like, so there's a certain way you got to look if you're a Nazi. Mm-hmm. Maggiano's Little Italy explained the situation by saying, the protesters were upset because of a banquet we were hosting for a group called the National Policy Institute. This was a last-minute booking made Friday afternoon, and the reservation was made under a different name. Therefore, we were not aware that NPI was dining with us or what the group represents. Well, maybe Maggiano's Little Italy will pay a little more attention next time. Those tricky Nazis. They booked it under a different name. Mm-hmm. Bimler. Durbles. Right. You bet. And, of course, everybody knows that Mike Pence went to the theater over the weekend. He went to see Hamilton. Okay, so come on, Bob! Okay, that one you own. Only it looks like boob. Yeah, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt that it's Bob, but it may be boob, I don't know. The poor guy in Queens was monetarily perturbed. It's not fair to call him a racist, you know, just because he, you know, screams racist things. They only do that when their economic anxiety's acting up. No, but Mike Pence went to the theater, went to see Hamilton. We still haven't managed to make Hamilton Gate a trending hashtag. But it would be kind of interesting to know how Mike Pence got tickets to a show that is sold out through August 2017. But anyway, at the end of the program, and this is important, after the program was over, all the singing, all the dancing, after it was all over, they took their curtain call. And then as he was walking out, the guy who plays Aaron Burr, which I find slightly ironic, no, a whole lot ironic, called out Mike Pence and very gently asked him to try to be a decent human being. This is, of course, asking more than Mike Pence can ever deliver. I knew somebody'd go there. Maggiano's Little Italy. Steve writes in and says, Anito Bay, Ussolini May. Shh. Because, you know, the Trumpansies don't speak Pig Latin. But this, of course, caused the future most powerful man on Earth to have a meltdown. Somebody gave Benito Cheeto back his Twitter phone. They really should have changed the password. And so he had a hissy on Twitter saying that the actors were rude to Mike Pence. Apologize! He did that with an exclamation point. Apologize! Where no apology is earned. Or deserved. Or needed. Apologize! And then he melted down because Alec Baldwin made fun of him again on Saturday Night Live. And it really was quite funny. That's Kate McKinnon doing what's her name? Kellyanne Conway. And the look on her face when Mike Pence walks in and walks past her, just the full body cringe that she did. Just, perfect. Perfect. Again, the future most powerful man on Earth had a meltdown and demanded, no, I'm not kidding, equal time on Saturday Night Live. Because, you know, he's such a funny guy. And equal time doesn't... But it did cause me to think, okay, Donnie, you want equal time? Then bring back the fairness doctrine. Because that's where that idea of equal time comes from. The fairness doctrine. Which has, you know, long been moldering in its grave. Yeah. Charming. He's going to be the most powerful man on Earth, and he throws hissies. On Twitter. At actors. And TV shows, comedy shows. Does that make you want to hide under the sofa for the next 4 years? Because it does me. I mean, in that moment, I mean, Carol Baker coined the term "Trumple thin skin," but over the weekend it was. It was sort of, debuted in all of its glory. He is Trumple thin skin. He can't take criticism. He's a four-year-old with little tiny four-year-old hands in an otherwise septuagenarian body. Mm-hmm. Oh, And then Trump demanded that theaters be a safe space. Dipshit? Can I call you that, Donnie? Dipshit? The theater has never been a safe space. The theater has always been, by definition, a place where we confront our fears, our anxieties, where we celebrate our victories. But it is, above all things, a place where conventional wisdom, common thought, are challenged. I was thinking about it over the weekend. Agnes and I were talking about Euripides' The Trojan Women. Euripides wrote that after the slaughter during the Peloponnesian War on the Isle of Melos, because he was so shocked and horrified by it. Yeah, even in an age of non-mass media, word gets around. And the people who watched the Trojan women were shocked and horrified, too. And then there's the whole Oedipus thing, Sophocles. Having to confront the idea of one man having to be punished and punish himself for something that he had no knowledge in bringing upon himself or upon his people. And that's one of the things that scares me about Benito Chito. The old Greek concept of hubris is predicated on the idea that the person with the hubris and whose hubris brings on tragedy is absolutely clueless. And it usually bites people in the ass who are absolutely, morally, 100% rock solid, lead pipe cinch certain of how right they are. James says by email, no, Bob, let him dig that hole. Let him buy that rope. Clarence says, I'm baffled about Pence. Please explain about Mr. Pence. He's the guy that has issues with minorities, women, and LGBTQ people. The cast of Hamilton is stacked with the people he just doesn't care about. I'm baffled to say the least. Well, it was a PR thing. I mean, it was supposed to be. I mean, see, he was, I mean, there are all kinds of gay, lesbian, Hispanic, Negro actors up there. And see, I mean, he can sit there and enjoy it because, after all, it's really a play about white people. And in light of the fact that, who wants to see Cats for the 57th time? I mean, really. Memory all alone. Ah! I forget. But this was big and splashy. And obviously the cast knew that he was going to be there because this statement was written in advance. Somebody apparently got in touch and got special treatment for Mike Pence and his daughter. And the daughter's probably the one who wanted to see it anyway because, you know, she probably likes that hip-hoppy music. That hippity-hoppity music? Yeah, she probably likes that. And, of course, he's an proud and indulgent papa. But he didn't want her going there amongst all those homos and dark-skinned people without he was there to provide his loving, paternal, patriarchal guidance. Don't look, Ethel! But it was too late. He done got her over to the frozen foods. And now the news is all full of stories about how Mike Pence was not offended, not insulted. So he's already in direct disagreement again, with his own boss. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing engendered a whole nother thing, of white wing pout rage. Enter Jeanine Pirro over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Hockey puck. Get the hockey puck. Nice long length of duct tape. I happen to have the camo duct tape here. And a Vancouver Canucks hockey puck. Mmm, tasty.
Opening statement. The treatment of Vice President-elect Mike Pence last night in New York City where he was booed on the way into the play Hamilton and lectured from the stage on his way out was both outrageous and embarrassing. What happened in that theater, one block from this studio, was out and out reverse racism and teed up hate for a man who has done nothing to deserve this inappropriate and disgusting behavior by those who take it upon themselves to use what was supposed to be a night of art and recreation and appreciation for our American history as a political bully pulpit to chide the incoming vice president.
I don't think I've seen or heard a sentence that long since I put down James Joyce's Ulysses. Or maybe The Sound and the Fury, the Benji part by William Faulkner. But that line about who had done nothing to deserve it? Well, back when it came time, a few years back, when Mike Pencilneck Geek was in the Congress, when it came time to reauthorize funding for HIV/AIDS research and treatment, Mike Pencilneck Geek proposed an amendment to the legislation that would have forbidden any federal monies going to anyone who was actually working on and treating people with HIV/AIDS who didn't condemn homosexuality. In other words, Mike Pence wanted to keep people with HIV/AIDS from being treated because there was nobody out there who was actually actively treating HIV/AIDS and researching it who was also at the same time an evangelical fundamentalist, amosexual, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, yada, 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 culture warrior. And then, and that's another one of those things I thought of. Gerald points out, Janine Pirro says, inappropriate. Inappropriate? You mean like yelling, you lie, in a joint session of Congress at the President of the United States? That kind of inappropriate? Oh, but they have teeny tiny itsy bitsy short little memories and they don't remember that kind of thing. Yeah. Beautiful, ain't it? Don't spit out the hockey puck. We ain't done.
Take a listen.
We are the diverse America who are alarmed and anxious that your new administration will not protect us, our planet, our children, our parents, or defend us and uphold our inalienable rights, sir. But we truly hope that this show has inspired you to uphold our American values and to work on behalf of all of us. This wonderful American story told by a diverse group of men, women of different colors, creeds, and orientations.
You're kidding, right?
No, really, Janine. Nobody's kidding. Because a whole lot of people are terrified of that pair of two-bit thugs that have been elected, well, by a minority of this country, president and vice president. I mean, that's quite eloquent. And again, not saying. Choosing the Aaron Burr character to deliver that. Oh, well, we don't have to worry about people actually knowing American history or anything. But choosing the Aaron Burr character to deliver that in the same city where Alexander Hamilton actually said the filthy things that he said that made Aaron Burr finally call him out. Well, I don't think the goddess of irony had it. I mean, well, maybe she had a hand in it, but it wasn't anything more than a little move along now. Because that is absolutely brilliant. Hey, Mikey, you want to take a rowboat ride across the Hudson to Weehawken? You can see where things sort of played out after Alexander Hamilton said a lot of vile, filthy, trashy things about somebody. You know, kind of the way in modern parlance, the way that Pence has said that gay people need to be subjected to conversion therapy. Or that business owners should be able to deny services based on someone's perceived sexuality. Nah.
You're alarmed. The vice president is not going to protect us, our children, our parents, our planet, our values. Who's left? Al-Qaeda? Of course he's going to protect us, our parents, our children, our planet, and defend us.
Objection, Your Honor. No foundation. Because there really isn't. The entire history and career of Mike Pence is a history and career of bigotry, of hate, of misogyny. I mean, this is a man who routinely sponsored the ugliest, most vile, most hateful attempts to restrict a woman's right to choose, okay? Who wants, who makes no bones about wanting a raped woman to have to carry her rapist's baby to term and give birth to it.
Not the baby's fault.
Jesus, this woman.
Why didn't you ask Hillary Clinton, part of the disastrous Obama administration that put so many Americans at risk when they were in charge? Why didn't you ask her that when she attended Hamilton? No, you let her enjoy the show. Or Bernie Sanders. You even gave him a standing ovation. The vice president. Our vice president-elect from a family of veterans whose son is in the military, himself someone elected to serve in the House of Representatives for 12 years, elected the governor of a state, and now the vice president-elect of the United States. One, I might add, without a hint of scandal, this man is well aware of his obligation, and he deserves nothing but our respect and acceptance.
Yeah, he deserves nothing but our respect and acceptance when he refuses to respect and accept people for how they love each other or for what they do with the internal workings of their bodies or even when they don't believe in the same deity that he believes in. Yeah, okay, sure. Done nothing. Not a whiff of scandal. Not a whiff. Not even a little bit. Oh, come on, Janine. We can't quit now. You're only half. Man, a lot of competition as we draw down to the end of the year. For Ms. Aggrieved White Privilege 2016.
When he chooses to come to your play about American history for his first real moment of relaxation with his family after a grueling campaign where he fought not only the Democrats, but the media, the pollsters, the talking geniuses, the establishment, the White House, and even Jay-Z. You have to cry your eyes out and have your temper tantrums. You holier-than-thou liberals in this country have to start looking in the mirror. Last night violates everything you say that you stand for. That big tent, the inclusive, broad-minded acceptance of everyone, even people who don't look or act like you. What happened to your old love trumps hate line? You're all damn hypocrites. You think that you and people who think like...
Is it just me? Or, wait. I wonder if we could get Jeanine Pirro to simply say three words. A pledge pin? Is she related to that guy? Meanwhile, Steve in New York says, remind me, who exactly was it who for 8 years had his citizenship questioned, whose wife and children were constantly belittled from the entire cadre of right-wing fuckwads? This fuckwad wants to talk about inappropriate? And in terms of protect us, Steve also notes, she didn't include the cast in her words. Well, hell no, they don't need protecting. Sylvia says, with Trump taking over the presidency from Obama, we can now truly say orange. Oh, no, is the new black. Robert in Australia says, Bob, it's not just America. The whole world's going to have to hunker down for the next 4 years. And I'm worried for my country. Our politicians have never stood up to the U.S. Whatever you've wanted, we've done. It comes from the notion of the World War II generation that the USA saved us from the Japanese. I'm worried that Post will drag us into another useless war as W did before. I'm worried that attitudes and behavior becoming apparent in the USA will start to be openly displayed here. I've had discussions online with Trumpansees who seem to believe that come January 20th, 2017, they'll be entitled to do whatever they want to whomever they want. Can't wait, said one. So the rule of law won't apply to you, I asked. The reply was along the lines of, you libtard, Trump will be president. Robert in Oz says, I'm worried and I'm bunkering down. Yeah. Meanwhile, Steve, another member of the fraternity of Steve, says white rural Christian America also just happens to enjoy a far greater share of political and policy power via their ubiquitous representation as a voting bloc, regardless of platforms or avowed common cause. Going to skip over the Christian part, since Americans are known to profess that faith routinely, while actually believing in its tenets about as much as they do the prospect of a tofu turkey at Thanksgiving. Forget the deliberate bias of an electoral college or even the disproportionate allocation of voice entailed in a Senate whose very origin is based precisely in an undemocratic power shifting to a checkerboard of states and themselves created for that same purpose. North and South Dakota? Give me a break. Yeah, North Dakota. We'll talk about that in a little bit. By the way, did you know that the only thing about the United States government that you can't change under the Constitution is how the Senate is made up? Mm-hmm. It's true. And what else is new, says Steve? Anything resembling a majority rural America has been on the decline since about 1920, and the prosperity of a post-World War II American economy has been consolidating and distributing and redistributing the urban populace ever since. So that now the rural component, the voting base of largely rural states, represents about 17% of the total voting population, while the machinations of a weird electoral scheme and the obvious inequity of an exclusive club of 100 twists and distorts and tortures the popular will, even as it continues to proffer and profit from the watering down of one sort of vote for the spiking of another. And just who lives or works in rural America anyway? The uneducated white working class in the true rural South? The unemployed union worker surviving in a rust belt of blasted hopes and low-wage service sector serfdom? The college-educated kid serving coffee at Starbucks out in the suburbs or exurbs? Is a housing development in a canyon 30 miles from the nearest town urban or rural? Or is it the cowboy out in Wyoming riding his big white stallion and grazing his cattle on federal land, all the while bitching and complaining about all the tax dollars he doesn't need to pay for all the government subsidy and treasury he gladly accepts? Depending on the cards dealt, one gets some percentage of a vote, but not one. Maybe 0.5 or 0.6, sometimes 1.5 or 2,
This is American politics, pure and simple. If you don't know the game, a good poker face ain't going to do you much good at all. Regards, Steve in China. And that's true. I mean, rural America, I mean, by definition, there can't be that much voting force to it. So when we say rural America, we're also talking about Indianapolis. Okay, not Indianapolis, but maybe, smaller, but not teeny tiny Indiana towns. We're talking about, you know, the town where I grew up, which has in the four cities there, an aggregate population of somewhere probably approaching 100,000 people. That's rural America. Well, that ain't rural. Gerald points out, the Obama administration was a disaster. Question, what disaster? Unemployment down? Healthcare available to everyone who wants it? Killed bin Laden? Yeah, Janine, tell us about the disastrous Obama administration. Well, healthcare available to everybody who wants it isn't exactly, no, because there are lots of people who would like to have the Medicaid expansion in places like Alabama, in places like South Carolina, Stan. They don't get it. Because, see, they keep voting for people who won't let them have it. Under the rubric of family values and protecting our right to have our guns. Well, goody, you got a right to your guns. So that means when the doc says, hey, well, no, the doc doesn't even say, hey. You just wind up, shitting blood or coughing up blood, something like that. You know, something's desperately wrong, but you don't have any health insurance. So you can use your Second Amendment remedy to, die quickly. Right? Yeah. Yeah, 10-4, Teddy Bear. Come on back, Janine.
Like you are the only ones who deserve respect. Well, let me tell you something. This guy won fair and square in spite of the rigged system that you think is so damn democratic. Your party, your candidate was rejected, and you lost. Now, you crybabies want to rethink the Electoral College. Now, you're Hamiltonians. You're students of American history. Why not hip-hop about the Electoral College? Or is that the part of the Constitution that you just want to ignore? Do I need to remind you it's called Article 2 of the United States Constitution? Maybe you want to dance about Hamilton. Why not dance about that? Not part of your agenda? Well, let me tell you something. Everyday Americans, forgotten Americans, most of whom can't afford tickets to your play and may not even have heard of Hamilton, got up and they voted. Even though they were told it wouldn't matter, they voted because they were fed up against your policies, because your...
Really? The government's been run for the last 8 years by the cast of Hamilton? Some bitch! I wish somebody would have let me know. God, she must be a real joy at breakfast. Mama, can I have some cereal? Do you realize that I have to go and hector people on Fox News every night so you can have some cereal? Do you? Or is that not part of your agenda, kids?
Sorry, Mama.
Sure you're sorry. You're sorry now. You're sorry because millions of Americans who didn't even think they had a chance, who in the rigged system that we were told was rigged, went and voted so that you could have great American cereal again, kid.
Inspiring. Isn't it just...
party spends too much, and you regulate too much, and your party's nominees are corrupt. You and your bloated federal government and your global fantasies about bringing in the rest of the world, and you don't give a damn who's paying for it, and you don't care who can afford it. The middle class and the low-income classes have had just about enough. And they didn't just reject your presidential candidate. They rejected your Senate, your House, and your governorships. Get used to it. And I've got news for you. Don't lecture this man. You may know a little about hip-hop and dancing around a stage. I majored in American history. And I saw the play Hamilton, and I loved it.
Well.
But you just took the fun, the enjoyment, and the memory of that play right out of me. Which might explain why the number one hashtag that's trending right now is hashtag Boycott Hamilton.
Wile E. Coyote, super genius.
It was true. There for a little bit on the Twitter, there was a trending hashtag from outraged poo-flinging Trumpanzees, Boycott Hamilton.
How you gonna do that, Trumpanzees? I mean, it's only sold out till August 2017. After that, it'll sell out some more. And it's on the road, even. It's a traveling show. Uh-huh. It really is. And the traveling cast in Chicago was subjected to a Trumpanzee having a hissy fit in the audience.
We won! Deal with it!
That's so not fascist, isn't it? Yeah, not at all. Not even a little bit fascist. Okay, it's a whole lot fascist. Trumpansies. Gonna be a long 4 years. Long 4 years. Well, just, you know, well. And of course, as soon as that hashtag trended, it was mocked relentlessly. I wonder where Jeanine Pirro majored in American history. The draw spunky on the back of a matchbook, School of American History, perhaps? Because it kind of sounds like it. Well, let's run over and check in with Tracy real quick. Hey, Tracy. I love it when our conversations begin with you laughing.
Yeah. Did I mention, yeah, you mentioned that, you know, Hamilton is traveling. Yeah, I have tickets for it when it gets to LA.
You're not going to boycott Trump?
No. You know, as a matter of fact, because typically when you're a season ticket holder, you can get, you know, more tickets. But for Hamilton, you can only get two extra. So now I'm thinking I might be hawking those bitches.
Well, I mean,
that's gonna go pretty dead.
Yeah, you might. I mean, you know, there's probably anti-scalping laws in California, but still.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, of course they are, but I mean, I'm just saying I can get. I'm just this tickles me because, you know, Boycott Hamilton, like you said, this show is sold out until next year for one thing. The average Trumpansy has no idea what Hamilton is even about, nor would they even want to see the show. And even, you know, the the pincer wasn't even, he wasn't at all aggrieved or upset or pissed. And it wasn't at all rude. It's like, look, dude, we're Americans as well. And, you know, we just don't want your all-white White House, you know, to do horrible things to us. And what was so funny, what did Purple Thin Skin say about the theater is supposed to be a special place?
It's a safe place. You know, where he never has to confront anything that he doesn't like. I mean, it's all just chorus line for him.
Exactly. Well, see, the thing is, the theater is one of the few places where there is a special and safe place for people of color, for people in the LGBTQ community, and whatnot, and so forth. That's the one place that is celebrated to be different. You know, it is just, I mean, again, this man spent his Sunday tweeting about that, and I guess he went on a Twitter rant about Saturday Night Live as well.
He did.
So this is the man.
He demanded. He demanded equal time from Saturday Night Live.
Bitch, please. I'm real tired of white folks. Certain white folks. I'm just. These people who feel that they lived through 8 years of hell with Obama. Tell me again. How terrible. I mean, okay, I'm biased, Bob. But, you know, neither one of us are Obama apologists. Oh. 8 years that was so horrible, so egregious that these people just lost their, you know, their minds. Oh, yeah. I think I know the answer, but you go ahead and you tell me your answer, and then I'll tell you mine. Go ahead.
No, I want to hear yours.
Oh, because he was black.
Well, okay.
What's yours?
Yep. No, it's where I was going.
They are still so butthurt. And when I say it with every pounding, no lube, just raw butt hurt there could possibly be over this man being president. I mean, when you say let's take our White House back, gee, I wonder what they mean by that there, Bob.
Well, yeah, I mean, they've taken their country back.
They're going to make America great again there, Bob. You mean America white again? And again, America's going to be white. That is just the craziest. It's like, dude, seriously? And then who's this bitch that was doing is it Tommy Lahren's mother?
Now, see, you brought her up this time. This one's not, no, this one's not on me. No, she's,
but I know, it's my
she's kind of, Jeanine Pirro is kind of the doyenne right-wing lady outrage over to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda.
These people. And again,
apparently that's a career path. I don't know. When they're looking for one, I don't know if the national broadcaster seeking outraged white lady.
Is she blonde as well?
No, she's kind of dark and dark-haired and olive-skinned.
You mean what they would call swarthy?
No, she's not. She's not swarthy. She's Mediterranean.
Isn't that what they used to call swarthy? I mean, I'm just saying, and I'm not saying it to be direct. Well, baby,
no, I mean, well, now we call it. Now we just call it white. Used to be, they weren't. The Irish weren't white once upon a time.
No. And see, this is what tickles me about, you know, the fluidity of race. One thing that I will never be white, even if I went the Michael Jackson route. Not going to happen. There's not enough skin bleaching stuff in the world to turn me anything resembling white.
No.
But it's just like, you know, it is
that never ceases to amaze me. I mean, actually, I'm just beyond because I've come to this sort of quiet peace about this whole thing. I'm just going to sit back and look, you know, and hope for the best, but expect the worst. And I'm just going to keep on keeping on. I'm just going to do what I have to do. I'm going to, you know, go to school. I'm going to finish school, become a therapist, and hope that by the time the good news is by the time I finish school and getting my licensing and all that, it'll be at least 4 years. So, hopefully we'll have a different administration. Hopefully the Democrats will get their heads out their asses and realize the same old, same old. But then they already started off with Chuck Schumer. So come on, guys. For real? It's like...
Hey. I mean, at least not... Well, you do have DiFi to worry about. But Joe Manchin has declared that he's gonna give Jeff Sessions a fair hearing and probably will vote for him. Because there's been some ugly things said about him, but he's a good and decent man.
Uh-huh. Now, this is the man that said, call one of his co-workers, boy.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably said it just like that, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you know your place? And call the white person.
You got to be careful what you say around white people, boy. That was the statement.
Wow. And when Republicans said that he was too racist to become a federal judge, so what? Oh, so is that maturity thing that Trump did, you know, because, you know, he's gotten more mature since he said grab him by the pussy. So that's, you know, so is that...
Oh,
so,
can I just say, you mentioned it, can I just say something real quick? And I don't know... You mentioned that thing that he said.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how Janine Outrage there was screaming about how they had ruined her Hamilton experience for her?
Right.
You know, we got bombarded by grab 'em by the pussy. And it's still going around because it won't go away.
Nope. Not gonna.
I wonder how many couples have had that bit of nastiness intrude into their intimacy.
Exactly.
Gay or straight. Because I can tell you that the last thing I want to think about in that context is Donald Trump.
Let's just say
cold shower.
Bleach shower. A cold shower with one part bleach, two parts water? Or should it be two parts bleach, one part shower, water? I seriously... It saddens me to think that... Now, I have a question, because, you know, when I have a question about American history and politics and whatever, you know, so this thing, this Electoral College thing, which, you know, she's clearly winning, and they're still counting votes. Mine is probably one of those provisional votes that they're counting, or just finally got counted. Why? I mean... Please explain to me the Electoral College, because, you know, and forgive me, Horn family, because it just boggles my mind that these fools get to elect their president. And if this is a democracy, how and why is this still going on?
Well, okay, so we have to start historically with the idea that there was a split of opinion among the framers of the Constitution and the delegates to the Constitutional Convention as to just how much democracy they were going to put up with. For instance, they set up the Senate to be filled with people selected by the state legislatures or the governor. No direct election there. They allowed for direct election of the members of the House of Representatives, but it was the direct election of the members of the House of Representatives by people who qualified to vote. No women.
Randall.
No women. Randall, no Native Americans. No black folks. And no white men who didn't own property.
That's what I said. So you had to be a landowner, a white male landowner.
Yeah. Well, no, a white male property owner. You could be a white male who owned a slave in the South. And
oh, so it just has to be property. Okay, gotcha.
Just like, you know, in ancient Rome, the lists of who could be a senator were determined by net worth, not, you know, intellectual worth. So you start there, and then they come up with the idea of the presidency. And they got to figure out how he's going to be elected. And, you know, there was a rigorous and vigorous debate. And Hamilton came up with the idea of the Electoral College. Madison didn't care for it. But it was a compromise. Madison wanted direct election of the president. Again, by white male property owners. Now, to Madison's credit, we must acknowledge that as time went on, he explicitly, specifically said the franchise must be expanded for this to work. He wanted more people voting.
Right.
He didn't get around to women or black folks or indigenous people, but he wanted more people. He wanted more white males voting. It was a step in the right direction. But the Electoral College says that each state shall have a given number of electors and that they shall then vote for president. And the presidency will be determined by the outcome of the Electoral College vote. So twice in 16 years and a couple of times before that, somebody wound up being the president who did not win the popular vote in the United States. It always seems to inure, in the three cases I'm aware of, it inures to the benefit of the Republicans. Once in the 19th century and twice in the 21st. You can have an Electoral College victory because of the way votes are apportioned. For instance, West Virginia has 3 members of the House and 2 members of the Senate. We have 5 delegates to the Electoral College. Not those people, but that number. Okay. California's Electoral College contingent is made up of a group of people equal to the number of members of the House of Representatives plus your 2 senators. Even small states are always guaranteed at least 1 member of the House and 2 members of the Senate.
Why? That's another.
Well, because you've got to have representation. But there are several little historical tricks that get played. Steve in China mentioned North and South Dakota.
Right.
Well, that was done so that there would be 2 senators from South Dakota and 2 senators from North Dakota, and they would each have 1 member of the House. So, boom, that's 3 Electoral College votes for an area that should probably be 1 state.
Yes.
Prior to Texas being admitted to statehood, there was a provision for Texas to become 5 states. They instead decided to be 1. But you can have a situation where you can lose the popular vote. And, you know, Hillary Clinton winning the popular vote is largely a function of the West Coast, where votes are still being counted and her lead is still climbing. and yet not win the Electoral College.
And I just, and as,
and remember, I mean, as I've said, Tracy, remember, the first president to call for the elimination of the Electoral College was Andrew Jackson. So we've known there was a problem for that long, at least.
And Andrew Jackson, 1800s, yes?
1820s, 1830s.
Okay. So, damn near 200 years. Pretty near.
Yeah.
200 years, because we're fastly approaching the 2020s. Somebody was like, yo, you know what, this don't work. This is not good. So now my question, all these people running around saying that the Electoral College can change their mind. Not so, right?
Ain't gonna happen.
See? I don't know, you know, this is why I come and talk to you guys, and like, because again, you know, well, we have it, you know, things can change in December. You just watch. Bitches. Nothing's going to change. These people voted for who they wanted. And that's, so how does, okay, so who chooses the electors? How does that happen?
That's done in convention assembled. And the party that wins the state sends their electors. So, you know, there were electors elected at the Democratic Convention in West Virginia. And had Hillary carried this state, they would be the ones casting votes in the Electoral College.
Gotcha. Because that's what was confusing to me. I'm like, well, who are these motherfuckers and how do they bitch pick and where do they come? See, because you know me, I'm just going to be like, wait, but what? I think that's the day that I slipped through poli sci. I don't know. I just didn't show up to class. My teacher was explaining the Electoral College because I knew that, you know, that we were for years, like you said, decades, and not going on two centuries. We were trying to get rid, people were trying to get rid of the Electoral College. But like you said, it's been always in the favor of Republicans. So why would they want to get rid of the Electoral College? They, like you said, 2016. They've done it twice.
Well, so the Republicans are never going to have any motivation to do it.
No.
And any constitutional amendment is going to require ratification by the states. And guess what? You don't have the states to ratify that.
No. You need two. How many states? All of them are 2/3.
Two-thirds.
That's 2/3. So that's how many states? Quick, come on. Neither one. 2/3. 50, 14.
34.
I don't. 30, thank you. 34 states.
Yeah.
Yeah, see? Well, you know, it is what it is. My question is, you know, I mean, besides being part of the resistance, how are you going to get through the next 4 years?
It's going to be weird. I don't necessarily have an answer. To the extent that I'm still here, I'm going to be here every night.
Right. Well, I've noticed, like you said, you know,
I'll try to be an activist when I can be an activist.
That's all we can do, Bob. I mean, we had a meeting the other day at my church, and we were, of course, talking about race and I got a bunch of white tears. Well, we're not privileged at all. I'm like,
yeah, you are.
You know, yes, you are. You're white and you're men, whether or not you're gay or not.
But here's my kind of an, and I'm not trying to interrupt, but I do want to get this point across. And I think, you can tell me if it's valid. My issue is mostly, most of my activist time is spent on issues relating to mountaintop removal, and we all know that, right?
Exactly.
So
it should be.
So I need to get my white ass down when there's a protest involving women standing up for their rights to choose.
Yeah.
I need to do a better job of showing up, to add my voice such that it is to issues relating to, I mean, we don't have a big immigrant population in West Virginia, but to the extent that I can, yeah. I need to show up for that, because the key to all of this, I mean, I saw a New York Times piece calling for the end of identity politics, in which the thesis was that identity politics was what had done in the Democrats, because we so compartmentalize, and that leaves candidates to have to, if you're going to do a shout-out to the women, you have to do a shout-out to the Hispanics, you have to do a shout-out to people of, African-Americans, you have to do a shout-out to the environmentalists, you have to do a shout-out to labor. And if you miss anybody on
one
that
person,
list, they are going to be done. Pissed at you.
They're going to rally against you. He didn't bring up labor. He didn't bring
right.
up the women's issue.
Exactly.
He didn't bring up Black Lives Matter.
So, if I'm welcome in a Black Lives Matter protest, I'll join in. Not to try to tell anybody, but just to be there, show up.
And that's exactly, and that was what you know me in my mouth. And I call pretty much all the white people of my church a bunch of pussies. And
but showing up is half the battle.
And I said, I can yell and scream and say about Black Lives Matter and, you know, and about racism, and I could scream and rap, but I need white faces. I need white people to say, when they hear a racist joke, to say, not cool.
Yeah.
I need some, because I told my friend, all my friends that are going home for the holidays, you know, and they're listening to their relatives go on and on about Trump and how we're going to take our country back and all this. It's like it wasn't yours in the first place. I need people to start shutting stuff down, because I can, black folks, we can only do so much. And also realize that I don't have time to spare your feelings. I do not. I do not have time to hold you by the hand and lead you through this. Like Audre Lorde was, she's one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. It's one of those things that pisses me off that I didn't find about her until later in my life. But she basically says it. The oppressors want us to, the oppressed, to take care of them, to make them feel better about oppressing us. And I'm like, dude, seriously. Own up. Man up. Realize. I mean, you saw that post I told about how privileged are you?
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's just, how privileged are you? Because if you've never been pulled over just because, if you've never had to, denied a job because, if you're, you went to college, if you graduated from college, you graduated from high school, if you've never had to do, worry about, your privilege protects you to a certain extent. We need protection. We need we need boots on the ground, and we need my white allies to call out folks when they see, a lot of the Democrats during the last 8 years who sat back and said nothing when Donald Trump was, saying that our president was not born here. At that moment, they should have been all in his face and said, bitch, please. When he was saying that he didn't think our president was qualified and wanted to see his college transcripts. Look, man, we still haven't seen your tax returns.
And never will.
But you needed to, and never will. So the same scrutiny that, so this is, because didn't somebody, I think when the whole thing about the birther came up and somebody says something to Hillary Clinton, and she even says, well, what does it matter now? It does matter, because you should have said, I know this man. He is an American citizen. And how dare you say otherwise? John McCain lost the election because he stood up, didn't he?
He said Barack Obama's not a Muslim. He's a good American, and I just happen to have a difference of opinion with him. And that was the end of John McCain.
And that was the end of John McCain.
And that goes back to my argument about the effect of having racists in your coalition. That was the end of John McCain because a lot of racists stayed home because he wouldn't dog whistle to them. Now.
Right.
Here in Donald Trump, in states like Michigan and Wisconsin, you're talking about a loss by less than 50,000 votes. The combination of people who stayed home on our side with the weaponized racists was enough to create the concept of him as president.
Exactly. And that's why when I went on my rant the other day, about, you know, you protest vote, you're third party voter, and worst of all, you fools that stayed home. And I'm going to call you a fool. Because you know what? I don't give a damn how much you hated Hillary Clinton, how much I couldn't do with this dynasty. I couldn't do this. I couldn't in good conscience do this and this and that. Fun ghoul.
Well, you know, it got so bad that on the pages of Newsweek, Kurt Eichenwald penned an essay, and I thought it was kind of out there as far as Newsweek was concerned, and in it he told. Let me see if I can find it here. On Friday, I almost assaulted a fan of my work. I was in the Philadelphia International Airport, and a man who recognized me from one of my appearances on television news shows approached. He thanked me for reporting I'd done about Donald Trump before the election, expressed his outrage the Republican nominee had won, and then told me quite gruffly, "Get back to work." Something about his arrogance struck me, so I asked, "Who'd you vote for?" He replied,
"Oh,
you ready for this? Well, Stein, but..." I interrupted him and said, "You're lucky it's illegal for me to punch you in the face." Then after telling him to have sex with himself, but with a much cruder term, I turned and walked away. And the article is valuable because he lays out in pretty accessible terms the bullshit that was swallowed hook, line, and sinker by the members of the Sparkle Fart Unicorn Cavalry. In order to, you know, to depress Hillary Clinton's turnout, which incidentally was propaganda that was manipulated and finessed and massaged into the American body politic, you know, by Russia. And I'm sorry,
right.
I know the unicorn cavalry's out there going, "God damn it, that's not true." Yeah, it is.
It is, homie.
And it was a real wake up call when Kurt Eichenwald went point by point by point and showed that, like, you know, all of those emails, you know, "Oh, they were cooking the books for Hillary." They were all written after it had become impossible for Bernie to become the nominee. And so Eichenwald said, "A certain kind of liberal makes me sick. These people traffic in false equivalencies, always pretending that both nominees are the same, justifying their apathy and not voting, or preening about their narcissistic purity as they cast their ballot for a person they know cannot win." And, you know, he also goes on to say, I saw the opposition research notebook on Bernie and the Republican, the GOP opposition research notebook on Bernie. It was 2 feet thick, Tracy.
Wow.
And it included things like red baiting him for attending a rally with Daniel Ortega during the Sandinista era. And it included, you know, smearing him over a fictional essay that he wrote in the 70s. It included hammering him for being on unemployment for years on end. It hammered him over stealing electricity from his neighbor when his power got shut off. Now, whether these things were true or not, Tracy, that was the broad brush they were going to use to smear him with.
They were ready.
Sure they were.
You know, I mean,
because they're a competent they're a competent political organization that is more than happy to have shock troops from the fetus fetishists and the teabaggers and whatnot. But when it comes time to get the job done, they do it professionally.
Right.
Which we don't. Since you're stuck with the job for the time being, let me ask you a question real quick.
Am I speaking for all black people?
Yes, you are.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Absolutely.
Because I got to make sure.
You got to get your all black people hat on.
And I got to get my dashiki on. Hold up. Okay. All right.
Okay.
And my slits. Wait. No. OE. Okay, hold up. And my new ports.
No. Okay. Got your new ports. Good.
I'm ready. Come on.
Okay.
Come on with it.
So over the weekend, and I mean I'm not being a smartass here. I'm a pasty faced doughy white guy asking a legitimate question. I was presented with something that made me laugh and be really uncomfortable at the same time.
Oh, this is going to be good.
It was presented by one Dave Chappelle.
Okay.
And it was from his monologue. Okay. It was from his SNL monologue two Saturday nights ago now, right after the election.
Right. And I did watch the whole thing. So I think I know where you're going with this. So go for it.
The heartfelt stuff he said, you know, just touched me. Because it was real.
We didn't know Dave could get that deep, did we, Bob?
No, we did not. But the funny stuff.
That looked kind of good.
The funny stuff was Dave Chappelle funny too.
Yeah.
But because I'm spending a lot of time trying to evaluate how to respond, and I mean, this is serious. This is in earnest. Okay. I love comedy. I love a belly laugh, and I was laughing so hard there were tears running out of my eyes.
We need more belly laughs, Bob. We need them.
Okay,
We're craving the belly laugh.
And, you know, maybe I'll get email on this. I don't know. I hope I'm helping. The joke he told about Harambe. You remember it? He said in Cincinnati, at the zoo, the police shot a gorilla.
Right.
And
what was the gorilla's name?
Harambe? I think that was the gorilla's name, wasn't it?
Go ahead. Right.
And the police then said it was the hardest decision they had ever had to make.
True, because they did say that.
And then, because he is a professional comedian of extreme talent, he said, well, I don't know, but a whole lot of black folks are going to be going out and buying gorilla suits in Cincinnati.
Yes. And
only he didn't say black folks.
No. And you know what? It's true. And like he said, it was the hardest. I heard the joke, but I wasn't paying much attention to it. I think that was one of those when he was, you know, when people were laughing and clapping at his other stuff, I might not have heard the whole joke.
Well, you know, there's an argument that all comedy is rooted in pain.
Yeah.
And, I mean, pratfalls, you know, we laugh at people when they fall down.
Pie in the face, you gotta laugh.
Yeah. I mean, there's slapstick, and even the word slapstick. is, right? You know, a slapstick is a thing that makes it sound like you're really slapping the shit out of somebody.
Yep.
So I laughed really, really hard at that joke.
And then it hit you.
And then I stepped back and I went, I don't know if I've got a right to laugh at that joke.
It's not, well, see here, and this is me talking to you, not as a black person, but just as your friend. It's the shock value. It's, to me, it's like he wants you to laugh long enough before you realize what he's saying. And then you step back and say, holy crap, people care more about a, you know, the cops will have to think, but it was the hardest decision they had to make before they shot that gorilla.
Right, because there's also a case in Cincinnati where a cop just blew away a black dude without hardly even thinking about it.
Exactly. And there,
this is the one. This is the one where the cop lied and said the guy was trying to drag him, but the videotape showed him out to be, you know, a complete and total liar.
But he's not going to get convicted, is he?
Probably not.
Did they ever? Has anybody gotten convicted yet? Paul? But I mean, seriously.
Yeah, maybe a million years ago. But the larger question is, and see, I could hear the aggrieved white winger
right
somewhere. No, I could just in my head, I could hear the aggrieved white winger going, how come they get to make jokes using the N-word and we don't?
Because I love it when people ask me that question, because, you know, Jan thinks that she could take liberties because, you know, she's married to a Negro. And that was a fun conversation, because I think I was on the phone with one of my homegirls, and it was Negro this, Negro that, but I wasn't saying Negro. And so she's like, well, you're saying it. I said, yes. And I'm talking to another black person. And so I own that word. I use that word when I want to get a point across. When you say poor white trash or trailer trash or something like that, that's how I use that word. Okay? To more so, not so much race or what have you, but just stupidity.
Well, how about that? Check this out. Ron in Raleigh just sent me a note saying the local NBC affiliate down there censored a full 8 minutes of Dave Chappelle's monologue.
Yeah, I'm so glad I live in California.
And so by way of comparison, and let's all understand that I am not an aggrieved white winger or anything like that. I'm trying to learn here.
You sure?
I'm sure.
You are from West Virginia.
Well, I mean, somebody's got to not be one.
There's so many.
But you know, so yesterday I viewed this video out of the subway in New York. I don't know if you saw it on my page or not.
No.
And it's just this bizarre, it's just this bizarre, crazy occurrence where there's a black guy standing against a wall, and he winds up getting arrested for either having his hands in his pockets or not putting his hands in his pockets. It's not entirely clear.
Oh, God.
And then there's a woman with him who is walking around saying, I'm not resisting, I'm not doing anything. And a female NYPD officer grabs her, accosts her, and then arrests and handcuffs her. Meanwhile,
back at your Ford,
white guy walks up and talks nice to the cop and everything. Nothing happens to him. A Latina comes in and tries, when it begins to turn into a cop riot, and there's like six or seven cops all there all of a sudden, and she's trying to explain, you know, nothing happened here. There was nothing. She gets arrested. And they all get dragged away. Now, there's a moment, and I recognize that, you know, high-tension moments, whatever. The white cop is talking to the black guy who did or didn't have his hands in his pockets. I mean, it's just, it's, 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 It is an absurd piece of footage. And at one point, he says, N-word, addressing the white cop, N-word, I didn't, or I don't know what's going, or, you know, what's going on here? And I'm thinking, well, this is going to devolve pretty quick. And it did.
Of course.
And so, you know, between that piece of footage and the Dave Chappelle clip, you know, and I'm at this point in time, I'm pretty much coming across like how Richard Pryor used to talk, you know, the voice Richard Pryor used to use when he was talking about white people. I don't mean to.
But you're sitting there.
But I'm thinking
like
about
you said,
it.
2 weeks ago, you're sitting there thinking. 2 weeks ago, Dave Chappelle said every black person in and he didn't say like he says every black person. He didn't say that in Cincinnati. Well, hell, just about every black person in the United States should be going to get them a gorilla suit. You know, because the likelihood of being shot, because like you said, they got to think. It's like, wait, is this a person in costume? Or is it the actual gorilla?
Well, no, I mean, in terms of scenario,
you'll get, look, at worst case scenario, Bob is, you know, they'll say, well, just shoot him with a tranquilizer gun. At least you're not dead.
Yeah, well, right. And you know, in the larger context of it all, it was the idea that the police would, that a police department that shoots black folks, would say that the hardest, and I mean, this is one of those moments. The hardest decision we've ever faced was whether or not to take down a gorilla.
Right.
In other words, it was easier to make the decision to shoot a dark-skinned human being. So, you know, just wow.
Well, you're going to be careful because now you're going to get the letters from the animal rights activists.
Yeah.
So you rather than shoot a gorilla, Bob? Really? Seriously? It's just a Negro. What's wrong?
Stay out of my email, Tracy.
I'm waiting. I want you.
No, you know. No, you know. You know. You know.
No, it's just because you'll get those people. Those people is the same people who would, you know, feed dogs and take care of dogs before they took care of human beings. You know,
just by way of agreement, let's understand there are lawsuits pending in courts. And I don't disagree with them over the effects of a mountaintop removal site on an endangered species, you know, an owl or a bat.
That endangered species not being a human.
Well, but you can bring a suit over that. However, when you try to bring a suit over threats to human life, the court throws it out, and the Fourth Circuit has done this, because there is no legal right for human beings to complain about being poisoned to death.
Ain't that some shit?
I mean, when you step back and you look at it that way, it's like, well, you know, kind of wish I was a fucking snail darter.
I mean, if you know, the mountain that you lived on or lived around and all the other, you got to pray that, you know, you might want to go move an endangered species over in all these sites, so at least they'll stop blowing it up. I mean, when people care more, I mean, look, as much as I love Kimba, Jan told me, well, a long time ago, when her and her ex broke up the first time. And she was kind of hitting hard times. She would feed her dog before she fed herself. I'm like, call me horrible. Now, I was back in the day, there were times that I fed my child, Alex, before I would eat. But I'm sorry, I'm not going to go hungry for a dog. Am I terrible? Well, see, here's how I'm looking at it. You better hope I get fed, because at least if I get fed, I have the strength to get up and go to work or find a job to make sure I make enough money to feed both of us. You know what I'm saying? I just, people's priorities are so screwed up. And it's the same priority that felt that Hillary was the devil. So, and that I need to be a pure, you know, liberal and progressive and not vote for her or vote for Jill Stein or vote for, you know, to, you know, keep my, your hands off my Johnson. These same people. And then they'll be the ones that are crying to you and I about, oh my God, what's happening with this country? And at that point, you want to say, bitch, please. You have no one. It's like what we were talking about on Friday. These, you know, of course, you know, that we, these people who voted for Trump, are collaborators. Yes, well, we're not racist. We're not this. We're not this. Okay, you're not any of those things. I'll give you that. You're good, hardworking people. Okay, I'll give you that. However, you heard this man make fun and physically make fun, mocking a disabled person, saying throw people out because they didn't agree with you. You heard what he said about women. You heard what he said about his, about Mexican people. You heard what he said about black people. And you still voted for him. So I gotta wonder, what kind of person are you really? You're thinking that you're not all these things that he stands for, but yet and still, you voted for him. And I, like I said, and it was not just white people. I found out the other day, and I hope that it's not true, because, you know, I don't really care about celebrities. Whatever, make your money, do whatever you got to do. But I didn't care if people were Trump supporters and not Trump, Bush supporters. My only issue was this, what's her name? There was the chick that's on The Middle now and was on, Everyone Loves Raymond. She was a huge Breitbart supporter. She was so hurt when, he died. She called it a conspiracy.
Patricia Heaton, yeah. Heaton.
And I'm so I was done with her. I was done. I stopped, you know, and Everybody Loves Raymond was one of my favorite shows.
Who knew? It turns out that James Woods, who is a notorious Twitter troll, he quit Twitter because they suspended some neo-Nazi accounts the other day.
See,
I thought back to the,
I'm done with him.
I thought back to the time when we were in the movie theater watching Hercules, the Disney animated thing, and you know the Hades character was just a dick, okay, and of course it was voiced by James Woods. And when I saw that he threw a conniption, you know, threw a hissy over a neo-Nazi being run off of Twitter, I thought, well, who knew that James Woods didn't have to do any character preparation whatsoever to play a dick?
Well, I have one for you, and I hope to Jesus I'm wrong, because I am truly a fan of this man. The Rock. Was it alleged? Trump supported. And here I was all geared up to go see the new Disney cartoon this weekend or next or whatever. I decided to go see it. See, because from all accounts, from what people have said about Dwayne Johnson, he's a good guy. You know, racist, you know, cool with his fans, you know, a giver, he has given a chair, all these things. But from what I heard, he voted for Trump. It would basically be like,
well, and we got to sort through that, Tracy. I mean, I recognize that, because, like I said, you know, what do I do about the salt of the earth types that voted for Trump? How do I, you know, it's not what do I do. It's not like I can have some direct impact on any. But, you know, how do I sort that out inside my own mind? How do we sort that out in our minds?
How do we, when you know this person, and like I said, I don't know Dwayne Johnson personally, but I know of him. I know that I'm a fan. I know that, you know, and here's the funny, here's God is of irony. I'm driving on the freeway, and to my right is a billboard for what? The new movie that I am dying to see. And now I'm like, you messed that up for me. You have.
Well, no, I mean, everything. I mean, here where I live, Tracy, everything's in flux. Because I know what the numbers were here. So I'm walking in, you know, or I'm walking out of the, Rippy Mart, and my hands are full, and this big old burly guy grabs the door and says, "Thanks, man. No trouble, man." And in my head, and maybe this is because somebody needs to just Thorazine dart me in the neck, I kind of glance over to see if there's a Trump sticker on his truck.
Right.
Because there's this dichotomy between political choices made in a voting booth and the way we live our lives. So,
exactly.
I mean, it's weird. By the way, Marty says, Dwayne Johnson not only voted for Trump, he's also talking about running for office as a, conservative. A lot of empowerment in all of that.
Bro, you do realize you're half laugh, right? I mean, there's a half of you, and then you're Hawaiian or Samoan, half Hawaiian, half black, half Samoan. So,
I know. Hey Tracy, I gotta roll out of here, but it's been a lovely conversation. And I don't know that we're gonna come to any answers, but at least we're trying. So, you know, I mean, that's where you get the participation trophy or something, isn't it?
Well, like I said, it's like, you know, at some point that's a conversation we know what to do with the ones that are just out and out asshole racist motherfuckers. We're not going to deal with them anyway. But what do you do about the people who, for all intents and purposes, especially that you know, are good people? So to be continued, huh?
I guess. Yeah, I guess.
That's the question of the ages. Well, good night. Try to have a good rest of the night, and we'll talk again. So.
All right, you take care, Tracy. Good talking to you.
All right, my love.
Bye now.
Good talking to you as well. Good night.
Tracy, the lady cab driver. Conversation goes all over the place, but by the same token, a lot of ground covered. Note coming from Jen in Australia. There seems to be a misunderstanding regarding white privilege among some of us whiteies. It's not measured by the size of one's home or one's economic status. There can be people in mansions working daily to shed one's privilege, and no doubt those living in trailers who are soaked in it. If one is white, one has white privilege. It's that simple. The privilege is inherent, tattooed by an unfortunate lack of melanin. We have white privilege because it's affordable to us, so we have to actively work against it. One may not elect to have it, but it is bestowed upon us by other whites. Even if it is not our choice to be white and privileged, we need to vigilantly choose out of it at every opportunity so that we don't haphazardly avail ourselves of its rewards. We adapt to it as it is bestowed upon us. And just as no one ever seizes power with the intention of relinquishing it, it's not easy to renounce white privilege once we've been softened by its advantages. In summation, if one does not make an active attempt to shed white privilege, one has it. Even Tracy's enviable fetish for superior kitchenalia, that's a great word, kitchenalia, no more affords Tracy status as a Stepford wife. Our skin does determine some things definitively. We are white and we are privileged. Brown, black, Latino, at least when combined, most likely exceeds white population, but are still referred to as, magic word, minorities. When the real minority in the United States is the minority of people who voted for Donald Trump. And I just got a note from Jay Cruzen, subject line, get over it. When are you going to stop crying for Hillary and move the fuck on? She lost the election because she's a Republican. Well, see, that's the problem, Jay Cruzen. She didn't lose the election. She actually won the damn thing by a sizable majority. But Electoral College. Beyond that, the Democratic Party lost nationwide because they're not real Democrats. As defined by whom, Jay Cruzen? As defined by whom? Bitching about it is just being a sore loser and not at all constructive. Well, no, that's all in the ear of the beholder, Jay Cruzen. Some here bitching about it, some here trying to figure out how some of us fucked up so badly. Jay Cruzen says, I see the bright side. Instead of having to primary Hillary 4 years from now, we have 4 years to find a real FDR-style Democrat to put on the ballot in 2020. Don't forget that 2020 is the most important election in the near future because of the census. It's brutally important. And by then, we will either have an incumbent Trump at 74 years old, probably still throwing fits at Saturday Night Live, you know, assuming the planet or the humans upon it have not been reduced to a fucking cinder by then. Or we'll have President Pencil Neck Geek. Who will also be an incumbent. That's a good discussion for a later day, another time, though. Where is that FDR-style Democrat we're going to run in 2020? If you look on my Facebook page and scroll down a little ways, you'll find a speech made on the floor of the House of Representatives to what was probably an empty chamber by Representative Ruben Gallego, who made a pretty good case for himself because he straight up talked about Donald Trump in terms that Donald Trump needs to be talked about. Is it Elizabeth Warren? Is she the FDR Democrat we've all been waiting for? I guess we'll have to wait and see. And yes, the presidency is important. We're going to find out just how important here in the next 4 years. But the Congress is far more so. And it is that stuff, Jay Cruzen, that you say that I am crying about or bitching about that makes it less and less likely we're going to have control of the Congress anytime soon. Because those benefits all inure to the Republicans. It's worth reading up on. Other stuff that's out there, I don't know what you were doing last night. Oh, 22 minutes before the hour. And for this Moran Monday, the 21st day of November, we're laying a big old goose egg. Yeah, we try to raise $200 every evening, and nothing has happened. It's another night when I don't know. Maybe George Soros' internet just doesn't work real good. But yeah, it's zero. It's one of those zero nights, and those things hurt badly. But like I said, I don't know what y'all were doing last night. I spent a sizable chunk of it watching what's going on out in North Dakota with the No DAPL protests led by the Standing Rock Sioux people. Looked like a war. Made me hurt for my country. What happened is that there is a bridge on a highway called 1806 that is one of the main arteries that leads to the Standing Rock Reservation. Back in October, the paramilitary police forces blocked access to that bridge with burned out vehicles and concrete barriers. The water protectors went to try to clear it so that there, among other things, emergency vehicles could get through when needed to the Standing Rock Reservation by a direct and practicable route. They were attacked, and that's the only word you can use for it. They showed up on the bridge, and the militarized police screamed, "They're rioting!" when they weren't rioting. And then in freezing temperatures, the militarized police began hosing down the crowd with water cannon. On their Facebook page, they had the temerity to lie that they were using the water cannons to put out fires started by the water protectors. The water protectors had begun some small fires for purposes of warming people who were at risk of hypothermia. Interestingly, however, when the militarized police began shooting gas canisters at them, which involves flame by virtue of their ignition, they started grass fires. And the water cannons were never used to put out the grass fires that the militarized police, who have been co-opted by a private for-profit corporation, started. Then they moved into flashbang grenades. The sonic crowd dispersal weapon, and rubber bullets. People were brutally injured by the rubber bullets, injured by the grenades. One tribal elder went into cardiac arrest, and it was a nightmare scene out of some sort of dystopian science fiction movie, except for the fact that it wasn't. It was police from all over any number of states behaving like thugs in defense of a private property interest that is at best only marginally legal. There are heroes in America, and a whole bunch of them are out at Standing Rock right now. They've been arrested. They've been held in dog cages. Women have been strip searched. People have been grievously injured. Animals have been killed. They've had attack dogs sicked on them. And still they persist. The encampment now is something on the order of a small town. And they're taking care of each other as best they can. All in an effort not only to protect their own water, but the water of the police forces from North Dakota and adjoining states that stands to be ruined, poisoned forever, if the predators from, what is it, Energy Access Partners get their way. The land was taken under eminent domain, or under a perversion of eminent domain, that should have never been allowed to happen. And most importantly, a false dichotomy has been presented, and so often when capitalism is involved, there will be a false dichotomy or a dozen. This false dichotomy is that, well, we need this pipeline because it's more dangerous to transport it by rail or truck. Never considered is the idea that maybe we should leave the filth in the ground. Because that's the safest way to deal with that toxic goo that there is. Leave it where it is.
Yeah, but what about the jobs?
Well, those aren't the jobs of the future. Those are the jobs of the past. I mean, we've already seen the boom and bust cycle take place up there in the Bakken fields, the Bakken shale frack oil fields of North Dakota, which is what this pipeline is designed to transport. And if you could get every damn drop of oil that's there right now and transport it all at once, it would not reduce the gasoline at the pump per gallon price of a single American by a single penny. Not a cent. And even if they get their way and they build the Black Snake, it's still not going to do anybody in the United States any good at the pump. At all. Ever. But people sit around, God knows, Saturday night I sat and watched the humiliation of my beloved Mountaineers that I fully expected to take place. And, you know, sat there and cussed a little bit at the TV screen. And folks sit and play their fantasy football and you know, the check stats and everything. And, you know, everybody needs a hobby. But somebody who catches or throws footballs or tackles people who are running with footballs, those aren't heroes. It was lovely to see the Cubbies win a World Series. Those aren't heroes. People who win political elections, dear God, those aren't heroes. On the other hand, on the cold and growing colder plains of North Dakota, people gathered together merely to protect what is theirs and to protect what belongs, in their way of thinking, to seven generations. Who are being brutalized day in and day out by police forces that have no business in the struggle. Well, in my book, those are heroes. Gerald says, are these the same police that refuse to issue citations to people who crash into carts on the Walmart parking lot because it's private property and that makes it a civil matter? Yeah, it's only a police matter if there's massive corporate money involved. All caps. Jennifer writes in, I can't stand it, I can't stand it, I can't stand it. Bundys, armed, took land not theirs. Dakota Access Pipeline defending unarmed land that's theirs. I can't stand it, I can't stand it, I can't stand it. This is the line for me. If Obama doesn't intercede on their behalf, this is the line. I dump my citizenship. Plus an aside, I know it's not connected, but if he can enter the office 1 week in allowing Eric Holder to pardon fucking Ted Stevens, Alaska clearly guilty, but leave office not pardoning Don Siegelman, clearly innocent, I'm done. Both of these atrocities are the final straws for me. For years, Graham has urged me to keep my U.S. citizenship, but even he now is encouraging me to sever the last tie. Jennifer, I can't tell you which way to go on that. It would be a pain. I presume it would be a painful thing. But yeah, it is. On the Jesus Christ, on the way out the door, Barack, could you please pardon Don Siegelman and Leonard Peltier? God Almighty. But more than that, take action to stand with Standing Rock. And oh, by the way, elections have consequences. Yes, ammonium nitrate Bundy and his brother Doofus and their cranky old daddy Cloven, let me tell you about the Negro Bundy. Well, they got a pass. They got a walk from a truly bizarre jury in Oregon. But they still face trial in Nevada. And they've threatened to keep up their ways. Guess what happens in January? That U.S. attorney in Nevada's out of a job. Because the president gets to nominate all new U.S. attorneys. Guess whose trial is probably going to get tanked? Yeah, I know, Marty says. Marty says, try not to leave Mumia Abu-Jamal off that pardon list. He ain't never getting out. I mean, let's remember, my senator, Joe Manchin, was among six Democratic senators who spiked the nomination of Barack Obama's nominee to be the head of the Civil Rights Division of the DOJ. They spiked his nomination because at one point in time he had worked for the NAACP and worked on an appellate brief with a team related to trial injustices for Mumia Abu-Jamal. The nominee for Attorney General also voted against that good man's nomination because he had had the temerity to take his legal obligations as a provider of zealous defense seriously. Jen, my heart aches for you. Jen's in Australia. She says, I want to come home, Bob. I want my home back. Jen, I wish I could tell you you were going to get it. But I don't know what this country's going to be in 4 years, and neither does anybody else. And if anybody tells you, they know they're lying. We can posit. We can speculate. We can extrapolate. But no one really knows what Trump-merica is going to look like or feel like. But if you're scared, you've got a right to be. And that's the good thing, Jen. So far, he can't reach you where you are. 6 minutes before the hour, one last thing. Thanksgiving. I remember being a little kid and how they'd show us on a piece of that heavy art paper we used to get when we were little kids, and you'd take a pencil and you'd draw the outline around your fingers and all the way around your hand, and then you'd turn it into a turkey. Because the outline of a hand can, I don't know who came up with that, but it can be a turkey. And you'd color it and, you know, give the turkey a head and a, you know, a little hangy down thing. And the hallways of the school would be festooned with autumn leaves and hand turkeys. Sometimes there are Thanksgiving plays that involve admittedly highly historically inaccurate accounts of the Puritans, the Pilgrims, and the Indians who saved them, who saved their lazy asses. Lazy, ignorant, coddled, religiously insane asses. But, you know, when it takes place at your elementary school, the parents show up and they're all so proud. Little Timmy and little Cindy. And, you know, everybody, you know, some people are Indians and some people are Pilgrims. It's a nice way, especially with the kids that you get to play the Indians. It's a nice way to introduce stereotyping. And, you know, cultural appropriation. Well, they had one of those last week up in Clarksburg, West Virginia. And at the end of the program, all the little children got to come up and say thank you and give their names, say their name into the microphone over the PA system. It's a big deal, you know, for a five-year-old talking into a microphone. I know. I used to have little kids that got to come back here and talk into the microphone. So the video clip, and you can find it on my page. The video clip shows a little boy dressed up as a pilgrim coming up and saying his name. Thank you for coming out. Another little kid done up as an Indian comes up, gives his name, thank you. And then the little special needs child, who had been given the role of the turkey, walked up to speak into the microphone, and the minute, and you can see it in the video, the minute that the teacher sees that he's up at the microphone and getting ready to speak, snatches the microphone away. And the little boy just stands there heartbroken and begins to cry. What I said earlier about the way that, you know, grab them by the affects people. Well, I guess it's going to be like that for the next 4 years. Because when I saw that teacher snatch that microphone away before he could say gobble, gobble, which is what he wanted, he just wanted to say gobble, gobble. When I saw that happen, yeah, I got to sort through a bunch of this stuff if I'm going to make it through 4 years. Because the first thing that entered my mind was, well, what do you expect from people who ran to the polls to vote for a man who stood in front of the entire world and mocked a disabled person? I'm sure if he was to see it, see that video, Trump would say, well, get the microphone, get him out of here. Sick. Sick and cruel. Sick and cruel and you can go watch the video. You tell me that the superintendent of school said, no, that's not what you didn't see what you thought you saw. Interestingly, his name is Manchin. How about that? So let's get out of here. I guess we start the program tomorrow with a $400 fundraising goal, $200 in the hole and $200 for tomorrow night. Remember, it's a regular broadcast week, live radio on Thanksgiving night. I hope you'll join in. Maybe we'll do Thanksgiving on the front porch. I don't know. We'll have to see how Sparky feels about that. But anyway, thanks everybody for joining in this evening. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff for making it all go. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.